Morning, everybody. It's really lovely to see you all here this morning. And I'm dedicating this talk to my husband, Neil, who made a very significant intervention to get me to get structure right, and also makes the most excellent meringues, which gave me the sugar rush necessary to get the thing absolutely completed. Before I start, just want to remind us all that we've got to vote this week and want you to think quite carefully about what you're going to do there. Responsibility, remember, it's not just about what's good for me as an individual, but what you think this party is going to do for everybody as a community. And if you're 15 or 14 or whatever, you could always practice, because soon you'll be 16 and you'll need to do that every year. Even if you don't like politics, it's part of what you've got to do in Britain in order to ensure that we have decent government. Okay, I know there's a lot of steps, but you've got to start somewhere, okay? So just have a look at what the parties are saying and think, well, what do I really think about that? Okay? So you've got to do that this week. Right, this morning we are beginning a series on waiting, and my title is Pregnant Pauses, Waiting for a Promise. And it's really a two-man action this morning, because Elaine has done all the stuff on promises, but I'm going to focus more on waiting. These fantastic promises that we have, some of them are given to us already, but some of them we're waiting for. We're waiting for the return of Jesus, we are waiting for the kingdom coming on earth, and what do we do while we're waiting? So we're going to look at waiting as working, waiting as self-examination and hope, waiting as friendship with God, and waiting as dying. So we live in a 24/7 society, and we don't really do a lot of waiting anymore. We're always on the go as quickly as we can. Let's take two examples. One of the most obvious was the speed at which the development of vaccines to protect against COVID was made. The internet made constant global collaboration possible. SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, was first identified in December 2019. By December the 11th, 2020, the Pfizer vaccine became the first to receive emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration in the FDA. Creating a vaccine in under 1 year is no small feat. The mumps vaccine took 4 years to develop. And that article is online at Medical News Today, and it only takes you 9 minutes to read. And that's really great about the internet, because it tells you how long it's going to take you to read something so that you can get it read before you've got to go on to the next thing that you've got to do in your day. Every minute is budgeted. That's how fast it is. The second thing I want to say is computer games are a great, excellent informal education for preparing young people for future workplaces awash with information overload. What people do in games is to take in information from different sources, rules of the game, words, numbers, visuals, soundtrack. Gamers have to be aware of all of this information, prioritise it, select what's important, leave to the side what isn't, and then take split-second decisions at speed. Now, this is a very enjoyable form of manipulating information in its own right, and prepares young people for modern workplaces. Just on when we're here, games which contain stereotypes of women or people from ethnic minorities, imaginations stimulated by killing prostitutes, are very likely to fall into misogynistic habits in the workplace, no matter how skilled we were in techniques to get there. So just watch the content of the games. In addition to all this speed and activity, we are the kind of Christians who value activism, known as evangelicals. David Bebbington has defined evangelicals as orthodox Christians who value the cross of Christ, conversion, the Bible, and activism. And what he means is that we frame our Christianity as the message of the Bible, that Jesus died to save us from our sins and be converted to that good news. That is the most important decision that a person can take this side of eternity, we think. Because of that, it's beholden on us to tell people about Jesus, to be constant in service, in the home, at work, or in the church. And this has at times acted like a jet engine on the church, enabling it to develop rapidly. However, although we work our socks off, we can sometimes be left with a curiously empty feeling about our faith, as if it is distant from us. Just as some of our secular counterparts get to middle life and wonder where that fabulous life that they've been working for is when they are surrounded by all its trappings. It's important for us to realise that this frenetic activity is not necessarily what God expects from us. God is not a gangmaster who has created to work us into the ground. We know that, right? Okay, I'm not suggesting for a minute you don't. But in order to see it more clearly, we've got to step off the roundabouts, the merry-go-rounds. And we've done that this morning to come back to one of the key stories of faith and check our expectations of speed and activity against what we find there. And the story is of a promise of a baby given to golden oldies, Abraham and Sarah, who were 190 respectively. So Angus is too young for this story. The story is God said he would give Abraham a new land and so many children that his descendants would number more than all the grains of sand on the seashore. He had a wife called Sarah, but they didn't have any children. God said they were going to have this baby. Time passed, no baby. When Abraham was 99, God told him again about the promise of many children. God changed his name from Abram to Abraham and his wife's name from Sarai to Sarah. Both characters got extra letters in their name to mirror the extra descendants they were going to have. And when Abraham replied to God that he was really very thankful for what God would do through his heir Ishmael, God's promise became more specific. The son through whom this promise was to be fulfilled was not Ishmael, but a child to whom Sarah herself would give birth. Genesis 17 and 17 records that Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, "Can a child be born to a man who is 100 years old?" As you might very well do yourself if you found yourself in such a situation. Sarah laughed when she heard about it. And when the baby arrived, everybody laughed. In fact, the whole thing was so funny that the parents called the child Isaac, which means laughter. Please note, God had the last laugh. So what did Abraham and Sarah do while they were waiting? Well, they laughed with disbelief, tried to help God out by arranging for a baby by a surrogate mother, which was a complete and total disaster, showed hospitality to guests, which was great, carried on with business as usual, which meant travelling through other people's countries, and Abraham telling kings that Sarah was his sister and not his wife, and getting into a state where he almost got himself killed. So that would have ended the promise quite quickly. So none of that seems very helpful in terms of what to do while you're waiting, because all these people just seem to get in God's road. In Abraham, for all his capacity for making mistakes, God had found someone who trusted him. And when God had said, "Leave everything and follow me, I'm going to make you a great nation," Abraham did that. And for that, God was highly pleased with Abraham. Possibly Abraham thought that God would lead him to a fabulous city where his new nation would have headquarters. But God's plans were far more far-reaching than that and much more detailed. Because God the Father loved Abraham, he decided that through Abraham and his descendants, he would educate the nation of Israel so that when the time was right, he could send his special servant, the Son of God, Jesus, truly God and truly human, to save the world through his death and resurrection. This story is about waiting for the work of God. It's not the result of human activity. In fact, human activity is of no use whatsoever. Abraham and Sarah were well past the age of having children. And when they did try to help God along, they caused themselves difficulty. But it is exactly God's action in that story that brings the promise to us 21st century gamers and consumers. All those years ago, from a time we never knew and a culture we don't understand, God was working to bring us to a place where we could come to find out about him and know him. And here we all are this morning. Maybe we've come through ties of family or friends. We come to find God, who is always looking for us. His activity is completely reliable, as we've been singing in the promises. From one baby born to centenarians, through many years, Abraham's descendants, as defined by Paul in Romans 4, now number 2.2 billion. Now, doesn't that make the promise of the grains of sand seem so far-fetched now? I mean, the babies seem to be a big enough sort of difficult thing to believe, but the grains of sand? There are 2.2 billion Christians in the world. That is how important and how possible it is to wait for the promises of God. He keeps his promises. Let's think about waiting as work then. Abraham and Sarah would have to bring up this child alongside their surrogate brother, and that created absolute havoc. And when we get to these details in the story, we recognise the warp and weft of our own lives, our own families and our work. And in these places where we work, we can aim to uphold Christian values, to tell the truth, not to steal, not to watch porn videos sitting beside a female colleague, remember to pray for somebody who gets into that situation, that there might be somebody to walk through that dark valley with them. Be kind to all we work with, do our work to the best of our ability. A blessed place for work in the Christian faith. If, like me, you lifted the Herald on Tuesday to see our very own Linda de Castacar in a lovely spring coat, looking about 23, being honoured by her whole society on the occasion of her retirement, you probably felt like me, just a wee warm glow inside, just because we know her and we think she's great too, and we've benefited so much from her hard work. And it's not just Linda's work that's important to God, but that of every one of us who puts our shoulder to the wheel to bring up children, adult children, and for those who work faithfully in whatever area God has called us to. As conscientious Christian people, we need to be aware of the dangers of overwork, which can easily lead to burnout. And that goes for Christian work just as much as work in the secular workplace. We need to avoid thinking that what we are is what we do at our work. And remember, as Philip Yancey puts it, there is nothing you can do to make God love you any more, and there is nothing that you can do to make God love you any less. Before Easter and Christmas, two important days in the Christian calendar, there is a time of waiting. 4 weeks at Advent before Christmas and 6 weeks of Lent before Easter. Both are periods of self-examination, how are things between me and God, and often Christians will use the Bible or books or music or paintings to help them pray. And it gives us the opportunity to see where we are concerning the promises and often where we would like to be. Is it time for a kind of new development in my Christian life? Okay. Advent and Lent are there specifically to enact waiting for the fulfilment of the promise as we focus on the birth of Christ and his death and resurrection. We can get really ground down with life and its endless deaths and violence. So it's important to take time to focus on the promises. The promises are related to hope, and it is important to have hope while we're waiting. I'm sure I'm not the only one who felt that the resurrection was difficult to lay alongside the war in Ukraine. But listening to the services from Kyiv and the Ukrainian church in London last Sunday demonstrated that even in these hellish circumstances, Christians want to and do ring church bells to assert that Jesus is risen. The Christian faith does not buckle under the encounter with evil. Other Christian traditions have thought that these periods of stepping off the merry-go-round are important ways of sustaining our spiritual life, just as long as we've noticed that coming to church on a Sunday is also one of the ways of stepping off the merry-go-rounds and getting in touch with the beliefs you value most deeply. But what about ordinary time, the other 42 weeks of the year and the other 6 days of the week? Let's think about waiting as friendship with God. Abraham was known as the friend of God. What does that mean? We come from an activist tradition, and very honourable it is too. But it's worth noting here that the opposite of activism is not just being passive and sitting about with your feet up. Rather, it's being meditative or contemplative. It's about prayer rather than work, or sometimes as a form of work. Some people see it that way. And contemplative prayer is not the worship or intercessory prayer which we're used to and which are excellent forms of prayer. Rather, it is paying total attention to God in loving attentiveness and concentration. For those of you who hold a daily quiet time, which is precious to you, just really be grateful about that and keep going with it. But for those of you who, for whom this form has maybe lost its meaning, there are many, many other ways to pray. Pray as you can, not as you can't. And in all aspects of human life, talk to God in your mother tongue. God understands your mother tongue. And if you have something that you need to say, say it, and say it to God. He is particularly happy to hear whatever you want to tell him. He always welcomes us into his presence. Now, I have got quite a lot more to say about other forms of prayer, but I can't do it this morning because we would be here for an extra 10 minutes and that would only get us started. So I'm going to move on to the next point. Before I leave it, if any of you have a prayer life that is so dry that you think you know, you're giving up with it, type into YouTube a prayer called The Examine. It's an ancient prayer of the church. It's usually done at the end of the day. You'll find a friendly Jesuit who will take you through the steps and help you to start it. Don't worry that they're a Catholic, okay? It's not their Catholicism that's the point here, it's their Christianity, okay? And otherwise, apply to yours truly for any more information. Right, so far I've really been talking to people who are young or in early adulthood or in middle age. When we get older, more of us experience, and more of us are experiencing, the process of ageing. Waiting without working becomes more pronounced. We become less mobile, we may experience debilitation through illness. Mentally, some of us become less agile. And for those of us who are activists, that can bring frustration because we think we're being kind of sidelined. You know, and we say to ourselves, well, I know what I would do if I was in charge. If only people would listen to what I have to say. Do they not know that we tried that back in 1996 and it didn't work then? Why don't they ask me? Now, the other side of that angry coin is despair. Lord, I've done everything I could. I've committed everything to you. Myself, my possessions, my family, and here I am at the end of my life and we're not one bit further forward than when I began. And actually, I think the world is going to the dogs quickly. And that takes us right back to the Abraham and Sarah story when we looked at it from the point of view of what they had done and not from what God was doing. It's very salutary to acknowledge that our place in the providence of God, though valued by him, was culturally specific and time-bound. This sort of waiting can very closely move into despair. And that's why we explicitly need to correct our thinking. It's crucial to remember that it was never going to be us. It was never going to be us who were the main character in this drama. It was always going to be God. It was always him that was going to bring the promise to fulfillment. God alone was going to get from 1 to 2.2 billion. But he loves to have us help him in his work. When we put it like this, we begin to feel better because rationally, well, we always actually knew that was what the deal was. And it's just getting knocked off, our ego getting knocked off its perch that we don't like. But in addition to that corrective thinking, we also have the example of Jesus, who worked tirelessly in 3 years of public ministry and then was handed over by Judas to the religious police. And from that moment on, he is no longer the one who's doing things. Rather, he is the one to whom things are done. And although he did not endure the rigours of old age, it is striking how the experience of his passion includes emotional states of age, the loss of control, the sense of being pushed about from pillar to post, having life's work being willfully misunderstood, staring despair in the face, and feeling abandoned by God. And although this can be true of old age, and there is another side to old age, which is about unity, it can also be an experience that afflicts us at any stage in our life when we've been going along as best as we can and suddenly we hit a wall and everything that we've held dear, all the promises seem to retreat into the distance and we're left in this area where things seem extremely dull and hurtful. But because Jesus himself was tested by what he suffered, he is able to help those who are being tested. So in that dark place, Jesus is there, even if you can't feel him, resting on the promises. And in laying down that control, God was never more active. Through Jesus, God was pleased to reconcile all things to himself. Lots of people have experienced trauma. Lots of people, like Jesus, have been tortured and killed, and the instruments of their suffering rust in the dustbins of history. But with Jesus, the robe, the tree, the nails, the eternal details will never be forgotten. And what that means is that the good that Jesus did, and united with him the good that we have done, and the details of his sufferings in the nail-pierced hands, and the details of our sufferings united with him, will accompany us into glory. As his body has been glorified, our bodies will be glorified, but our stories will still be there somehow in the new world that we're waiting for. We'll all have nail-pierced hands there. Even as a human being in a final illness, with little appreciation of what's happening around us, when we're able to do nothing for ourselves, totally dependent on others for the basics of life, we are still precious to God. Nothing will be lost. Nothing will be forgotten. Nothing will be overlooked. Nothing we can do will make him love us any more. Nothing we can do will make him love us any less. Waiting for the fulfillment of God's promise is in reality a description of the human condition. It is our life, our work, our waiting and fulfillment. Stand on the promises. Remember what Elaine brought us in the first part of the service. There is no point being in a religion and not taking advantage of all of its benefits. One of my favourite songs at the moment is My Life Goes On in Endless Song Above Earth's Lamentation. And it acknowledges Earth's lamentation. And I acknowledge it, as you've seen, you know, the sorrow that I feel about Ukraine, the sort of despair I feel about British politics at the moment. And you'll have your own stories, and they're probably a lot worse than mine. But somewhere I hear the sound of a song that tells me that there's a better day coming, and that the person that tells me that is one in whom I can trust. My favourite song when I was a wee girl was Standing on the Promises of Christ My King. Used to bawl that off at the top of my head at Drongan when I was there with Aunt Eppie and Uncle Anna. And it's still an important song for me. Thanks very much for listening.